afternoon, everyone.
Good morning.
And, oh, good morning, sorry. Good morning, friends, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in here in Philadelphia. And our lodge, as all the lodges throughout the world, we are all united under the idea of aim, purpose, and teachings regarding all aspects of universal brotherhood. And we do this in a very democratic way. We have no dues or fees. We do have expenses, though, and there's no president, there's no contracts you have to sign. We're all here together with the idea of spread broadcasting the teachings of the philosophy of theosophy that were put down in writing in the mid to late 1800s. And we are very lucky to have all of these writings available to us. And we only pay, all the writings are on the table in the foyer, and all we pay is for shipping and printing. We make no profit because we feel as though these ideas are ours, and so we don't make any profit off of them. Now, in order to promulgate these ideas, the lodge here in Philadelphia has two meetings a week, and for right now we don't have our program printed up yet. You can get the Sunday schedule is just printed out, and it is at the table behind the usher. But our Sunday talks the overall topic for October, November, and December. October is Theosophy and the Theosophical Movement. November, the umbrella topic is Reincarnation and Karma. And then December is Cycles and Cyclic Law. And there are different ways that these meetings are handled, but no matter what it is, what type of meeting it is, we will always have plenty of time for questions and discussions. Our Wednesday class is from 7:45 until 9. This coming Wednesday, we'll be doing an overview of the Bhagavad Gita, and the following week, we'll be studying our winter topic, which is basically the ocean of theosophy. We'll be starting that study. And the Sunday classes run from 11 to 12. Our doors open at 10:30. And our Wednesdays are from 7:45 until 9. The doors open at 5:30, and there is time to, the library will be open from 5:30 until 7:30. And there's always a reference that goes along with the ocean classes, as well as the reading from the book. So if you want to come in early and prepare for that, you're more than welcome. If there's another special study you're interested in, there's always a librarian available during those 2 hours to help you in your search. And we are financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. And it is said that any contribution given in the right spirit is limitless. And we know that the winter, the cold weather's coming up, and we do have oil bills. So if anybody feels inclined, we will take contributions. But as we say, we're not going to pass a basket. Activities depend on voluntary offerings of time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So today's class, then, we are finishing up our summer study in the differences between the individuality and the personality. And it was a very enlightening summer. The readings that we had were very stimulating, and we learned an awful lot from them, and it definitely stretched our minds. We don't know about anybody else. And it made us think more deeply about what life, evolution really are, and we had to look closer at ourselves. Why do we need to know the difference between the individuality and the personality? And that's a question that we would like to kind of keep out throughout this class. It's when we're looking practically at the idea of the differences between the individuality and the personality, why is important? Why do we need to know that? And when we're looking at individuality and personality, what's the connection, rather, with the monad? And that seemed to be the tying piece throughout all of these classes we've had this summer, was the different aspects of the monad. But the monad is the reincarnating aspect of ourselves. And in the human, it is Atma with its vehicle Buddhi, and mind or manas is lit up, although we see that that lighting up is of different degrees. And Atma Buddhi or the monad is the observer, and nothing can affect it. Nothing the personality does will raise or lower it. But the personality changes with each incarnation, and whereas the individuality, the Atma Buddhi, does not. The personality goes through Devakan, one of the after-death states, and this is where the higher thoughts are assimilated. And then another life, after this assimilation is all finished, another life comes into being with another personality, but the same monad. And we also learned how the monad travels through earlier stages of evolution from the lower kingdoms all the way up to man and beyond. But at the same time, we also learned that the monad does not become a rock, does not become a plant, does not become a wolf. But it is the monad experiencing life in these kingdoms and learning, and the issue with a lot of things with English, we just can't get the right ideas from our language, but we try as much as we can. So today we're going to be finishing off this fascinating topic by learning about how man comes to flourish in this stage of evolution. Last week, we started out by learning about the two different classes of monads and how they affect our evolutionary development. And we learned about the solar petries, which gives us the form, and the solar petries, which affects us. We looked at the lunar petries, giving us the form, and the solar petries, having to do with our spiritual essence. But today we will be looking up at the lighting up of mind and the emergence of their self-conscious and the emergence of the self-conscious man. So please keep in mind, we'll go over at the end of the class, practically speaking, why is it important we know this difference between the individuality and the personality. So we will have a volunteer come up and summarize today's part.
So this is the conclusion of our study. It's the capstone, as it were. Man being lit up. So entering the human kingdom. It is the mystery of individuality. So the first question is, how do the sons of wisdom, that are the solar Petris, the Dhyanis, how do they set fire to the lower principles and the monad, thus lighting up Manas in the new men? And the graphic phrase, projecting a spark, is used. What is that all about? Well, human beings may at present be incapable of completely understanding all that is involved in this initiating process. So we use analogy. And we know when we teach children, when we instruct children in something that's new and exciting and different, they light up. And so we've all seen that, we're sure. And that is the analogy we use. The intelligence of the children is quickened through association, through education, which is a drawing out and establishing bonds of sympathy. Also, we know about hero worship. We've all had heroes. We've all had examples in mythology and in real life of heroes, those who have conquered and those who have, you know, we tend often to think maybe that it is an easy thing, but the trick is, you know, it may look easy, but it's not. But these heroes play a part in inspiring younger souls to emulate their example. So these ideas, these divine instructors, who are one of the seven classes mentioned last week, they come upon the scene and they instruct infant humanity, children, as it were, and they light them up by burning into the mind, the nascent mind of mankind, that very pliable, very lower state, not meaning, you know, just a less sophisticated state. So these ideas are burned into the minds. Then it says, can we not conceive of an incipient humanity in its early stages of instructability being given degrees of knowledge of those with mind? Universal tradition states, and it shows, that primitive man, living for ages together with his creators and first instructors, the great teachers reveal to the incarnated monads that had just shaken off the vehicles of the lower kingdom and who had lost every recollection of the divine, of their divine origin, the great spiritual needs of transcendental worlds. So we needed to be reminded, and it says later in the part about reminding and how we can all remind each other. So this takes self-exertion. This is what the third fundamental of the secret doctrine states, that individuality, it starts first by natural impulse and then by self-induced and self-devised efforts. Therefore, this spark needs to be kindled, it needs to be inflamed, it needs oxygen, as it were. However indispensable was the help of the primeval instructors in setting fire to the mind of early mankind, unless the flame was nurtured by the recipients of the gift, that is us, it would burn low and eventually be extinguished. Each class of creators This is a quote from the Secret Doctrine here. Each class of creators endows man with what it has to give. The one builds his external form, the other gives him its essence, which later on becomes the human higher self, owing to the personal exertion of the individual. So those who received only a spark but have an inadequate form of self-consciousness, it is because they are so confused by the impression of the four lower principles. So we're reminded again that we were involved with those lower principles, but now we have this spark, this beginning of this higher mind. But if we don't work on it, really make an effort, well, we are confused, but it's because of we've been with these lower principles so long and they're so familiar with us. So self-consciousness is there. We can say, I am I, who am I, where did I come from? But not until they have learned to disassociate consciousness from the body and say, whatever I am, I cannot be this body, they will have, will they have fully emerged as egos. So the dissociation process must take place. We are not these lower forms. We are much, much more than that. And that is a long process of evolution. Now it states here, it makes a statement here which is very instructive, that those who do identify with the lower vehicles are in a child state of consciousness. And this is why the average member of the human race is so easily swayed by propaganda, desires and passions, by false leaders and priestcraft, that the higher wisdom and consciousness has not yet penetrated the brain mind. There is no need for discouragement, however. The advance to human maturity is gradual, and it's a gradual process up to the divine stage, and there are times when we can temporarily function on higher planes, and this temporarily functioning on higher planes, then we realize that, well, we did it before, can we do it again? The answer is yes. The initial awakening is continued by the sure alchemical method of mixture, amalgamation, and precipitation. In other words, through the law of brotherhood, individuals find themselves in the company of men of all degrees of intelligence and morality, and through osmosis there's a natural transfusion of thoughts and feelings. Anytime we look at anyone, and this is like the visual, anytime we look at anyone with our eyes, lives, that's in quotation, automatically pass from him to us and from us to them. This is reminding, it's hyphenated. We remind others, they remind us, and we are lit up in the process. So it is a continual lighting up. It is not a one-time experience. Each must decide for himself whether he will attain a conscious immortal life and spirit, or extinguish it, the consciousness in matter. The final section we'll leave for discussion in the chair, otherwise the summary would be too lengthy, but it is on an article by Mr. Judge entitled Meditation and Action, and it is very instructive.
And in regards to that article, The printout says that it's Theosophy 1388. The page number is actually 382. So if anybody wants to read that article. So, so we'll go ahead and take any questions or comments, discussion anybody has. Yes?
Throughout discussions in these rooms, we hear the word evolution. And yet this article talks about man's creator. How are we to align those two concepts?
Okay, how do we align the concepts of man's creator and evolution? Man's creator, and it, when we look at how the theosophical idea of evolution, and we have to look at the idea too that nothing is created, everything is there, and it's a almost like an amalgamation of different lives coming together. So when we're looking at man's creator, man is his own creator. And from lifetime to lifetime, from races, we create our own forms. And we were looking, there's an idea here in regards to forms, that at one point, as we're going through this evolution, our form needed, excuse me, our form developed to the point where we needed to have this spark into it. It was not a created as though a God creates. It says, you know, I will make man. Man has always been forming and always will form into different levels of forms. And when we're looking at the idea, we think in here of the creators, because he says here, shows primitive man living for ages together with his creators. Mainly what their creators are, they are actually giving us these ideas. And they are helping us to perfect the form so that these ideas can be impressed into it, so that we can look at ourselves as being lit up, and we have the correct form, and we have the correct spiritual impress. Yes?
So when it's talking about divine instructors and creators, we are still thinking of men in a spiritual sense as opposed to an anthropomorphic God.
Yes, thank you. It is not a... it's not a what they look at as a divine external being. These are beings that have been men and are a little bit further along, or a lot further along, in their evolutionary process. Yes?
Well, we think one of the biggest problems is when we say man, we don't know really what we mean or what theosophy means. There's man, the human form. That's not us. There is man, the thinker, who incarnates into that form and then does exactly what you said, is the creator of its own conditions. But man, the thinker, is always a spiritual incarnation from the highest. I mean, our connection is, well, the connection with everything, is from the highest we can imagine. But we should never think of ourselves as the personality, which is temporary. It's our working condition.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
I think the question really stirs up a great debate, because theosophy talks about hierarchies of intelligence that create this world. And you spoke of the lunar petries and the solar petries. And there's, it's just not a simple answer. Because everything is coming forth from that universe of intelligence, and there is a plan. So, whether we call it creation or reflection of the divine, or, you know,
Yes, again, we're looking at how the English language kind of, you know, it's like there's a break on continuously because we never really understand what exactly or how we can put these ideas in such a way that this incredibly deep idea of evolution, because if one is looking at an anthropomorphic God, we're looking at the one life that was created now. And whereas with the ancient teachings, we're looking at the idea that nothing is ever static. Everything is moving. And the hope is that it will be moving in an upward spiral. And when we look at our period of evolution, this Man Vantara is only one of heaven only knows how many millions and millions and millions of years we've been reincarnating. And the hope is, just like the part says, that everything is through self-exertion. So this idea of evolution is, there's an idea called the pivotal doctrine, where, as it was says here, we are given that light of mind, but once we get it, it is on us to keep moving with it. And we have to learn our lessons, and things just have to continue to improve as long as we put the effort in. Yes.
We thought the part about learning by osmosis and through the law of brotherhood, individuals, it's on the second page, mm-hmm. the second paragraph, individuals find themselves in the company of men of all degrees of intelligence and morality, and through osmosis there's a natural transfusion of thoughts and feelings. That's pretty fascinating, mm-hmm. and it's also very instructive, and we think about how our parents warned us about the companions that we keep, to always keep the best companions that we possibly can, because by osmosis we can also learn to do negative and destructive things. And then it talks about lives being automatically passing between us, from one to the other. What are these lives? When we look at another, there's these lives that are passed between us. What do they mean by that? I mean, in a general way, we may know, but what specifically?
Well, the question, this, we do want to comment on the beginning part of your comment as well. But the lives that we're looking at is that our bodies, I mean, we can look, well, that's my skin. But if one continues to look, there are, and you can't really see them, there are lives that our whole body is made up of. And it has to do with even when we eat. The different kinds of foods we eat have these different lives. They are, it's an essence, so to speak, of all the different kingdoms. Our body is made from these essences of all the different kingdoms. We have the mineral kingdom. We can look at all the electrolytes in our system. The plant kingdom is, you know, we have all of these essences within us. And as we impress them, and it's a constant coming and going, breathing through our mouth and our nose, the food we take in and excrete. These are all different essences that will go back to their own kingdom. And depending upon how we impress them with either a positive idea or a negative, can determine when they go back into the soil, they do affect that. So when we're looking at sharing, when we look at each other, especially if somebody's upset, we can feel that difference. And so it gives the whole new idea when we're walking down the street. If we see somebody who you can definitely tell is suffering in some way, if you can make contact and just smile, that can make that other person feel better. So it's interesting because until we actually read this, we weren't sure as to what exactly was going on when that happens. Like if you're at the store and you can definitely tell that your cashier is having a bad day, just by looking at him or her and smiling just a little, oh, I see, you know, things are going rush for you today, that makes them feel better and we're exchanging. But our positive aspect, we think, can overpower anything negative. And we have lots of hands.
In the library here, we have a book called Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain. And it has to do with Curlian photography, mm-hmm. which is a photograph of the astral or electric form within everything in life. And it's obvious then that we throw off this electricity and it affects people. And if people don't understand or accept the idea of this passage of lives, all you have to do is walk into a room where a fight has just taken place. Mm-hmm. Nobody's saying anything about it or acting like it, but you feel it inside yourself and you want to leave that room. It is non-physical material, astral material.
And we would like to just say, too, if anybody wants to read further on in The Ocean of Theosophy, Mr. Judge talks about this whole idea as well. Yes?
Is there some sort of intelligence in these lives that they have been trained in some way?
Well, we affect them. We can color these lives. And they, so as we color them, as we said, it can be a positive or a negative impression that we can make them. Yes, in the back.
Well, we've read in The Ocean, you know, that the brain is a dynamo of creating energy, and we know that humanity has watched and seen the forces of nature coming through the human form, and by directing it and by using it, great things have happened. And we see the remnants of that in our martial arts and our Tai Chi and the understanding of the human dynamics. But we know that science has found that when humanity or a man or a woman watches something, it changes what they're watching mm-hmm. just because they are giving it attention. So the eyes are the windows to the soul. And if we doubt that, what do we pay attention to? And how does it change by us paying attention to it? And we know that we affect our life greatly mm-hmm. by paying attention to certain things. It goes back to the statement, what was the word that was used?
Well, it's, excuse me. Well, it is interesting how these lives can be affected by what's going on around us, because there have been many, many research studies done about how people are affected by the music that they listen to, and how a lot, especially the impressionable younger population, with some of this hate music that's out there, and movies, the movies and the television anymore, it has so much to do with the base instincts, the lower characteristics of us. And we know that there are some other movies that are out there that we think are trying to almost buffer the violent and sensual movies that are out there, but it does, this kind of thing does affect these lives that are passing through us. Yes?
Well, in reference to the mystery of individuality and entering the human kingdom.
Where are you?
That's the title.
Oh, the title, okay. I'm thinking, where is that?
And, for some of us older listeners can remember the funny papers of the late 30s and 40s. It appears that a lot of those stories don't exist anymore in the funny papers, but the funny papers were very interesting, and children could wait till their parents read the funny story, usually on Sunday afternoon. But to make it short, one of my favorites was Tarzan and the Apes. And we could, as children, you could really understand the way the parent was reading the comic to us. We would like to know, since Tarzan was completely vile in the beginning, but he gradually became more human, being in contact with human beings. Now, how come the apes did not also become more human?
So the idea is about the, why would not an animal become more human-like by being in contact with a human?
Human beings. Tarzan, we forget now, someone began to talk to Tarzan and treat him like a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And in association with human beings, he became less and less ape-like.
Well, we know...
But the apes did not change.
Right. Well, Tarzan, we're guessing, it's kind of hard to, I mean, he's a fictional character, so it's kind of hard to really, you know, make a real comment on this, but he was human, and even though he had just, maybe just had a spark, and he was raised, I mean, he was born of human parents, and some, we don't remember how, but somehow he got separated and was raised by apes. So he had that part of his essence, and it just needed to be brought out, we guess. Yes?
The other thing is animals do become more humanized with their contact with humans. There was just a very interesting story about a four-footed hero at 9/11 who saved possibly 600 people by endangering himself to all of the things that were going on. So he was lifted up. He was, you know, he became more human. And even on the little tricks that you see animals do, they learn that from humans. So humans do affect animals, and animals do affect humans.
Yes, in the back.
Well, it also tells us in the Secret Doctrine that those sparks of consciousness, not self-consciousness, but consciousness involved in the lower kingdoms are working on a progression to, in the next Manvantara, reach the human form where the thinkers will incarnate and then that initiation will take place. So it's a huge and complicated subject.
One of the things that we did want to go back to when the one question about the amalgamation came up, it says, this is on the second page, the second paragraph, alchemical method of mixture, amalgamation, and precipitation. And we just wanted to say that in a way we think living around this area, I think we have a chance to really take advantage of the different types of people that live in the Five County and in New Jersey as well. Because we know just from our neighborhood that it is such a mixture of different types of cultures. And it's said in the Secret Doctrine, we know that that the new race will be from the Americas, not necessarily just from the United States, but from the Americas in general. And we can see it definitely in our neighborhood. So at this point, we think in many respects, we're kind of going through the mixture idea, because there's a lot of, there's a big influx of folks from different parts of the world coming in, and they're coming to this area initially. And we can see so many, especially, you know, on Penn's campus, there's a lot of young couples that are definitely of different ethnic backgrounds. So we can see how this idea of the mixture, amalgamation, and precipitation, and it, we just think that it's very exciting living here at this time to see this happen and to know what is going on. In the back.
Remember, the word osmosis was used, and,
yes,
and you're using it again with the precipitation, amalgamation, and so forth. But isn't that what we are told? Isn't that one of the secrets? The real meaning of our lives, our duty, is this osmosis, is we should always strive to live the higher life, always strive to put these ideas into practice, to give it, it's to give these ideas breath. And to do that, you must live them.
Mm-hmm.
To be in this world of space, you know, and by living these ideas, through osmosis, we affect everything around
mm-hmm.
us. And we, and said that we either draw the lower kingdoms forward or we retard them. So we're in these rooms. This is our secret
mm-hmm.
that we need to let everyone know that by the thoughts that we hold and the way we live our lives does affect everything around us.
And we go back to affecting everything is by our thoughts and feelings impressing the lives that are made up in our bodies. And it is said in the writings about how our, and especially in the secret doctrine, I mean in the ocean, about how our feelings and thoughts affect the earth in regards to cataclysms, weather, that kind of thing. And if we can continue to impress the astral with good feelings, good thoughts, good acts, that, you know, we can hopefully, you know, help the earth. And we also, a lot of people feel as though, well, what can I do? I'm just one person. But yes, you can affect a change in your neighborhood, with your neighbors. And as we said earlier, going, you know, if you're in the store and somebody's looking down, you know, we can help raise them up by being kind to animals. And there's just any number of things that we can do to help impress the world with these good thoughts. Is this a follow-up?
Well, we just wanted to add one word, and that's gratitude. Because I think the word sacrifice is mentioned, how the lower kingdoms sacrifice themselves for the next higher kingdom, and so forth and so on. So we are asked to be grateful or have that feeling toward those who have gone before us, to the masters, to those higher beings that keep that light shining. And therefore, we should be grateful for the lives below us, those lives that have sacrificed themselves for us. And you know, and that's the dilemma, the moral dilemma that we live in the world now, because we are not grateful for those lives that sacrificed themselves. We, you know, it's unfortunate, but we, you know, we struggle with that idea of being grateful.
Yeah, the idea of being grateful for the sacrifice that the lower kingdoms have made. And it's interesting because a number of years ago, when this lodge was showing the movies on one Friday a month, that we had one movie about preparing food. We forget what the whole thing was about, but it was talking about how if, while you're preparing food, rather than making it a drudge, you know, while you're preparing it, thinking about, you know, being grateful, as was just said, to that lower kingdom that's helping to nourish us, and it how the preparation of that type of food before it came to us, the people that were involved in, you know, were they in a, you know, what kind of frame of mind were they in, and that we are thanking them, and just kind of realizing, especially if it was vegetables or fruits from, you know, like across the country, about the trip that it made to get here. There's just, we can impress everything that we come here. In the back?
Well, thinking, you know, the phrase, what can I do? I'm just one person. If you're outside on a really cloudy day and you see one little streak of sunlight, it changes your mood. You are that one little streak of sunlight. But what we don't realize is there is an atmosphere around us at all times. It's called the astral light. It's an electrical video of everything, all our thoughts and feelings. It influences us. So we may be suddenly in a bad mood, and we just think, oh, that's me, and we go with it. If we would stop and think, well, that's the astral light. It is the feelings of the people in the world around me. I'm not going to go there. If we would take charge, we would begin to realize the influence is there, but we don't have to be influenced.
Because the influences in the astral light can influence us only if we let them. Yes?
The last paragraph on page 2, where it's describing the true service of man, in order to prepare ourselves to be capable of reminding others, we need to be starting from the right premise internally so that we are radiating as positively as we can. And therefore, this issue of meditation and turning our thoughts and ideas back away from just random thinking or automatic negative thoughts, but turning our thought and our spiritual mental nourishment back to the idea of the supreme and the deific essence that we can be for all. That's key, isn't it?
Yes, that basically is, somebody used the word capstone earlier, that all this talk that we've been having about impressing the lives and how we're affected by others, if we can look inward, if we can meditate, even if one can't meditate, at least have some quiet time concentrating on a higher idea. That way, as the astral light was just mentioned, we can populate the astral light so that in reality we can be a beacon sitting in our own home and just thinking these positive thoughts, reading some of the meditation books, just trying to relax and put forth as much as we can higher ideals, and thinking of the elder brothers and just doing good, not just like we said, you know, we can be that ray of sun if we just acknowledge that we are part of that deific essence, as is everyone else. So, yes.
Well, the ideas that we study here about altruism, brotherhood, our sevenfold nature, that we are deity, that we are soul in evolution, and that we can attain consciousness. Know ye not that ye are gods? These are considered heretical in most religions. But these are the ideas that are so sorely needed in order to be an antidote to the child state of consciousness, which does prevail. We have really our work is cut out for us. There's quite a burden here. And it is because of this child state of consciousness, not wanting to take responsibility, put it off on somebody else, vicarious atonement. That is why all this propaganda, these desires and passions, these false leaders, they sway humanity as a whole. So this lighting up is, you know, this is a gradual process, but it's so necessary, it's so needed.
Yeah, the idea of the lighting up, and as was said on the second paragraph, that once that essence in us is lit up, that it's on to us as to how to take it and work with it and evolve. That's our whole essence, that's our whole reason for being here, is the evolution of soul. But as we talked about the pivotal doctrine earlier, it's on us to evolve in a upward way. And the ideas that were just put forth about all the distractions that we have, and if we aren't on guard at all times, it is so easy to get caught up in the materialistic negative patterns that are just rife on the TV. And all you hear on the news are negative things, and every now and then they may put some nice little human interest story at the very end of the news, but by and large, that's all we see. So we have to be on guard. We have to be on guard at all times. Is this a follow-up?
Yes, and then at the very end, it talks about the storehouse of spiritual energy being replenished. So we don't have to feel that we personally have this burden that we have to lift up all humanity by ourselves. We have those, we have mm-hmm. the elder brothers, we have the teachers, those divine instructors, although they are not visible on the scene or still working mm-hmm. behind the scene, that through meditation and action, we get this font, this endless font of spiritual energy, and then we can be an impulse mm-hmm. to all of nature, working through us. We ourselves are not doing it, it is working through us.
Yeah, so we do have to keep that in mind all the time, that we do have help. And even if we don't realize the work that's being done behind the scenes, we have the help of the people in this meeting. Yes?
But at the same time, if we really accept these ideas, if we feel we already know them, we just don't know them well enough, we do have a burden. We are the companions to those teachers, those great ones who can't be here because it's so polluted. We have a responsibility to those who are childlike. We're teenagers, and we have to grow up. And until we grow up, how are those children going to imitate us? So we have a huge burden, but we're also told it only takes a few lovers of the truth to affect humanity positively.
Yes, that's a hopeful statement. We do have to work, but we have to always keep in mind these ideas and try to pass them on to others, but just know that as long as there are a few very committed workers, that we can change the world. In the back?
States that these ideas were said to have been burned into the minds of nascent humanity. So we have a connection with everyone. It's through these ideas. And it's through these ideas that we can elevate humanity.
Mm-hmm.
What are these ideas?
What are the ideas that we're talking about?
That were burned into the nascent humanity, which was us. What are
So what are these ideas? Well, we'll put it out because we know
brotherhood. It's everywhere. We even have an expression of brotherhood of thieves. At every level, you will find there is brotherhood, but we were taught universal brotherhood.
Yes, universal brotherhood, we think is probably the main one. Yes, your mothers.
I would think one of the basic things that we need to know is have a real knowledge of self, not just personal self, but a real knowledge of self, how we fit in life. In fact, all of this is addressed in the three fundamental rituals that we go over on Wednesdays.
Yes, we were going to say the three fundamental principles as well. Yes.
We think that law rules the universe. There's a law which rules the universe.
Yeah, law rules the universe, which we know is the second fundamental. Yes, in the back.
Honor, justice, compassion. We all have these ideas burned into us. It's just we use them in a narrow way. I'm compassionate for my family. You, get out of my way, because you might interfere with the success of my family. So it isn't that others don't have these ideas, it's that they have been taught to use them for their personal self instead of for the self of humanity.
Yes, and using these ideas not for self with the lower S, but self and universal ideas, I mean the universal brotherhood for all. Yes?
On the top of the page, those who received only his part. They can say, I am I, you are I, where did I come from? But not until they have learned to disassociate consciousness from the body, etc., etc. A good example, there are situations where you have children. The parents see one child very big, way ahead of the second child, doesn't seem to be able to make anything out of himself at all on their side. There are situations when those two children were in contact. The one that had the advance lit up that spark. And we know situations where that child, who nobody thought would do anything, advanced 10 times further than the one who supposed to have the spark. So we think that's a good example of association, and that we ourselves in this room can light up the spark in others by how we conduct ourselves and talk.
Yes, we can definitely be examples. So the question that we put forth at the beginning of the meeting, we'll just throw it out again. We have a couple minutes. Practically speaking, then, why do we need to know the difference between individuality and personality? That's like what we were doing all summer. Yes.
Well, if we're just looking at the personal, we're going to be blind. We're going to be blinded to others' needs, and we're going to retard all of evolution. If we look at the individuality, which we cannot see, but which we are, then that will liberate us.
Thank you. You're back.
If I focus on the personality, I keep making bigger problems for myself because I'm using the highest powers in the lowest way. If I focus on the realization that I am forever, that I am the willer, the thinker, the chooser, that I create conditions. Once I focus on that, everything is changed.
Mm-hmm.
I am in charge, and I am forever.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, let me just read this real quick. The third evolutionary stream is the host of the Manasa Putra. Some knew that the bodies of the least developed of the mindless men were neither ready nor suitable for their use, so they spurned them, leaving them to become the narrow-headed, destitute of higher knowledge till the fourth race. Incidentally, they delayed too long, and thereby generated a new and terrible karma which is not yet paid off. The Dhyanis turned from those who were half ready, projecting only a spark, which thereafter burned low. When they looked at those who were ready, "In these shall we dwell," said the lords of flame and of the dark wisdom. They entered these forms, so filling up the gap between the higher and the lower principles of man, and by reason of their fiery nature, kindled the germ of madness in them, and moreover, added to them the flame of their own minds. The meeting is over.